everybody, and welcome to another I Could Talk Kayfabe, because that's what we do here. I'm Joe.
I'm Sean.
Sorry there was no podcast last week. You know, things happen.
Well, we were I was at a podcast convention.
And I was at home eating baked Lays on the couch.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, we were both busy.
You more so than me. Yeah, and I was at the podcast movement.
Yeah.
In Anaheim. I got to fart around and say hi to people. And
was there, a lot of people's podcasts that you actually listened to that were there? Or
there's some people, there's definitely a lot of people that I was familiar with. Yeah. Like a lot of industry people. As far as actual podcasts that I'm familiar with, I mean, there's definitely a handful. Like, actually, speaking of wrestling, I did check out Bruce Pritchard.
Oh, okay.
Was speaking, because Bruce Pritchard's show, and actually this is actually something that maybe we can talk about here. Bruce Pritchard's show, what he does with that Conrad Thompson, you know, and basically, you know, it's just him talking about something to wrestle with, it's called. But it's just basically, you know, Conrad doing all this research and basically just kind of walking Bruce through, like, some event or thing that they talk about, you know, some WWF event or WWF period or whatever it is, about, like, oh, we'll talk about SummerSlam 1990, and they'll just go through all the matches and try to, you know, bring up memories and stuff like that. And the shows are like 2-3 hours long, and it's, but they're insanely popular, apparently. I mean I didn't realize how popular them, they were spouting out some of their figures, and to which I believe are legit, but it's pretty it was pretty interesting. And I actually learned quite a bit in terms of podcasting, you know, kind of learned, got a different perspective. But yeah, so yeah, Brother Love up there doing his thing. And
everyone always calls Bruce Pritchard Brother Love, like they never,
well, he was,
they never, like, oh, he was Rio Rogers.
Yo, but Rio Rogers was so fleeting and nonsensical.
What was Rio Rogers? Why did he try to talk like Dusty Rhodes? I don't understand that at all. That was
just something they decided to try.
Yeah, but like, it's not like Dusty Rhodes wasn't there. He had already had been there and left by the time Rio Rogers came out.
So I was gonna say, like, when was Rio Rogers around?
It was like,
it was like
93-ish.
Okay, yeah. So it was like, I was saying 93, 94. Yeah. And it wasn't very long.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does that. He does, I mean, he does great impressions.
Yeah, you know? He's just like, I'm going to talk like Dusty Rhodes, but I'm going to dress up like a cowboy.
I don't even remember him dressing like a cowboy. I just remember him being like Outback Jack, you know, kind of dressed like Outback Jack.
I thought he had like leather chaps on at one point. I don't remember. But yeah, the whole character was pretty stupid, actually. Now
it is real dumb, yeah.
What was the point of Rio Rogers? Why didn't they just bring back Brother Love? I know that, like, eventually he came back every now and then as an appearance, but I don't get it. Why didn't they just bring back Brother Love?
I don't know. Maybe they just felt that the character, I mean, maybe at that time, Vince felt that the character didn't have any point. You know, it's usually, obviously, it goes obviously to whatever he decides.
Yeah.
So he just went, eh. Whatever. Yeah, we're not going to do it.
When the Ultimate Warrior ended Brother Love's career, that was it.
He murdered him in the ring.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember it was all of a sudden, like, he was just like, Brother Love's like berating him or something. He's just like, fine, I'm going to go kill you in the ring. And he just press slammed him and splashed him like a million times. And it was like, all right, that's it.
And that was it for Brother Love until, like, he made a couple guest spots, but he never really, yeah, that was it for him. And now he's gone altogether.
Yeah. I think Bruce Pritchard was like his late 20s when he was doing Brother Love. He mentioned that, and I was like, really? You were that? I always thought Brother Love was like a 30s, or, you know, a dude in his 30s.
Oh, it's because he was so fat,
I guess.
Yeah, he wasn't in shape by any means.
Does fat age you?
No, I think it's just like, because he didn't look like a wrestler, obviously. He just looked like this fat, out of shape guy. So that's probably why you thought he was later in life than he actually was.
Oh, I guess.
Yeah, that's my theory behind it.
It's a good theory.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but he also the other show that, and I've actually been listening to, and I actually highly recommend, is What Happened When with Tony Schiavone. And basically, it's a version of something to wrestle with, but with Conrad talking to Tony Schiavone about WCW shit, and just kind of going through different pay-per-views and like events and people's careers at that time. And I've actually kind of caught on to that, because Tony Schiavone, actually, I kind of feel like I've missed him. I was like, man, I miss Tony Schiavone.
Yeah, he was fun.
He's fun. I mean, he didn't always, there's times where he didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
you know, it's obvious, but there's also, you know,
especially those later Nitro years, you could just tell he was just like, whatever. He rolled his eyes and was phoning it in. But.
Yeah. But he, yeah, on this podcast, he's actually game for a lot of stuff. And it's like his perspective is very, it's just unique. And I think Conrad does an excellent job at fostering it. I think what the key is to these shows and the reason why people liked them so much is Conrad also used to produce and be a part of Ric Flair's show when Ric Flair was doing that podcast. And so he's just your average fan, you know, that's, I don't know how he got into it. That's a very interesting question. But because he was a mortgage guy. He still is a mortgage guy and basically ended up like producing some of the best wrestling shows right now. But he just kind of has this, you know, way where it's like, he talks to these people about these events and he doesn't like pry too much on things. Like he doesn't say, you know, oh, I heard this rumor or he intimates a rumor.
Mm-hmm.
He just kind of brings it up and lets it be discussed.
Yeah.
And then like the people on the other end, you know, Bruce or Tony, they don't really like fight him. Like you don't feel like they're ribbing him in an answer or they're just like rolling their eyes. Like it feels like they're generally trying to answer the question.
Yeah.
And I feel like that interaction between them really resonates. And so that's an interesting form of wrestling podcast. And it's the fact that the shows are so long, like we typically do like an hour. It's a lot of, you know, granted the content's only going to take us so far, you know, but also, you know, I don't want to do a 3-hour show. The idea that people say, oh, how long a podcast should be is like, well, you should say it's 45 minutes to an hour. It's like a podcast is as long as it needs to be.
Yeah.
You get out what you get out and then you do it. And so if our shows are longer, it's longer. If it's shorter, it's shorter. And that's just how it is. But in these cases, these shows are like 3 hours long, you know, kind of like a Joe Rogan show. And, you know, that's not the standard rule. How dare you do a show that long? But it works.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I just found that to be interesting at this convention, you know, since it was wrestling related and I got to, you know, check stuff out. And he won, like, Bruce Pritchard won like sports podcast of the year, because apparently there's, and I knew about this, but I didn't really put it together. And now I'm kind of obsessed with it, that there's an academy of podcasters that at this podcast movement thing, they give out awards every year. And I don't know how you get nominated.
Who's in this academy?
Different podcast yahoos that they decide are, you know, because there's people like at the Podcast Hall of Fame. Okay. Like Cole Cabana's in it.
Okay.
And then there's all these other random people that are in it.
I'm curious if it's like the Academy Awards where like if you win an award, like Bruce Pritchard's now part of
that's another thing too.
Yeah.
So now he's in it. So which also makes me think, well, does that mean he could just vote for his own show every year?
Yeah, that's what I would imagine.
So he could just constantly be on the ballot and just be like, all right, well, I'm going to be the sports podcast for the every year.
Yeah.
You know, and like I don't know how they nominate.
How did a wrestling show win the sports one of the year, by the way? That's kind of weird to me.
I mean, it's least. Also going to maybe have something to do with like he was going to show up, you know?
Yeah, that could be it too.
But then again, I know they have video acceptance speeches, so I can't really put that completely out of it.
But like the entire genre of sports to give it to Bruce Pritchard sounds really weird to me.
I mean, his show definitely did break out in 2017, in the past year between the two shows. So, I mean, I think there's definitely a reason to celebrate it.
But in all of sports? Like, there's not a single sports podcast that, like, you know, like from a legitimate sport that would be
well. Again, it kind of based on like the whatever else is being nominated, because not all the nominations are that strong.
Yeah,
you know, and I don't know why they nominate certain things, but they just do.
Yeah,
and I kind of want to find that out because I've been asked questions about it recently now.
Yeah,
and I'm like, okay, well, how does that happen? All right, let's take our break.
Yeah,
and we'll come back and we'll talk about our book for this week.
Hey, I'm Jen.
And I'm Sean. We're here to tell you about our podcast, Worst Collection Ever.
And this is the show where we tell you about the worst comic book collection in existence. And it just happens to belong to us.
We have some of the worst comics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're bad. They're not worth anything.
No good.
Why do we own them? I own a number of issues of Terror Inc. and Guy Gardner.
Basically, we go around to local comic book stores and we buy everything we can out of dollar boxes.
We tell you about the weird stuff in them. We tell you about stuff that's related to them. We go into tangents and we're very uninformed. So,
oh my God, totally. But totally check out our podcast because you'll hear us just talk and joke about Marvel books and DC books from God only knows when.
That's right. It's our show, Worst Collection Ever, every Tuesday on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Download, rate, subscribe, tell a friend.
It'll be good and terrible, but good.
Okay, we're back. We have Pro Wrestling Illustrated from August of 1983.
That's right.
It is August of 2017 as of our recording this.
So oh, this, so this is, what, 30...
34 years ago.
Wow.
This magazine.
This actually is a pretty good magazine. It's in pretty good shape.
It's funny. So I turned 3 in August of 83.
Mm-hmm.
I actually remember what I got for my 3rd birthday.
Do you?
If you can believe that. I got this Fisher-Price Wild Western, like the little people.
Okay.
They had like a Wild Western playset, and that's what I got on my 3rd birthday.
Nice.
I remember that. Like, that's my earliest birthday memory of birthday presents. I got it in 1983.
I like it.
And then, because that was prior to my my getting He-Man figures, because I was still too young for He-Man. So, yeah, Wild West 1983 Little People playset. That's what I got.
Yeah.
And this magazine also, well, it's August 83, but it probably came out in like May or June of 83.
Yeah. So. Which is my birthday.
Yeah.
And I turned 3 in May.
And you probably don't remember what you got.
No.
No.
I don't think I remember really any toy. I mean, this is terrible. I don't really remember what kind of toys and stuff I got for Christmas and birthdays until like maybe I was 7.
Yeah. No, that's usually the age where you start forming memories is 7 or 8.
I mean, no, I have memories from like, from before that.
Yeah, yeah.
But nothing that it's like, it's super lucid and like, oh, I got, that's, because I remember like in 87, be like, oh, I got, you know, this G.I. Joe and I had this He-Man and I had this. I mean, I remember that. You know, I remember what toys I had or stuff like, you know, stuff like that. But I don't remember, you know, anything past that.
Yeah.
So.
I wasn't watching wrestling in 1983. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and so if somebody said you could win a phone call from Rowdy Roddy Piper, that wouldn't have meant anything to me because I would have been like, who's Rowdy Roddy Piper?
And what am I going to, what am I going to say? Is this going to sound awful?
Yeah.
And for actually, there's no way my mom would, if I was 3, I mean, why would she be like, yeah, go ahead and send this in? I'm a 3-year-old boy. Talk to me, Roddy Piper.
If you were a few years older than us, like around 8 or 9 in 1983, well, maybe not 8 or 9, maybe like 11 or 12, this might have been a big deal for you. Like, well, if you were born in like 73.
Well, also, too, I think you would have to also have been, because this is pre-WWF Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
So you are probably, if you're writing into Roddy Piper and you're talking to him, you're probably living in the South.
Yeah.
Because he's mid-Atlantic. Or maybe Los Angeles.
Yeah, or Portland.
Or Portland. I mean, okay. So, I mean, we're not talking Northeast.
Yeah. No, so. Yeah, you're not in Buffalo giving a shit about Roddy Piper.
And maybe you are. Maybe you're reading these magazines. You're like, oh, Roddy Piper, he really infuriates me from what I've read. And maybe you're able to catch Georgia Wrestling or whatever it is somehow. I don't know.
Like, you could probably watch it on TBS if you had TBS back then. I don't know how far spread TBS was by 1983.
I definitely don't remember having that back then, but no.
Yeah. I mean, I remember.
When I was 6 or 7, yeah.
Yeah, I remember having it as a kid, but I can't remember 1983 if my parents had TBS or not, so.
Dear Mom, did you have a TBS in 1983?
And she'll be like, I don't remember.
Why would I care?
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to Roddy Piper back then. So, but anyways, Roddy Piper's on the cover here. And yes, it's actually a pretty famous cover.
Yeah.
It's Roddy Piper just posing, wearing his ultra Scottish Santa Claus outfit.
Yeah.
I love this outfit, by the way. I think that jacket is awesome because he's wearing the kilt and he's wearing this red and white jacket with like the white fur trim along the lapel up and down the whole way. And
he still has chest hair.
Yeah, he's looking. Yeah, I mean, he pretty much had chest hair up until like the late 90s.
Yeah,
early 90s, late 80s. Why do I know this?
Oh, because he'd wrestle without a shirt.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah,
There's something I keep track of. I don't know. I keep track of the hirsuteness of 80s yeah. wrestlers. But so yeah, he's smiling. He's got the bagpipes slung over his shoulder, you know, up on his shoulders, and it's fucking awesome. It's a fucking yeah. great cover. So win a special fan contest, win a phone call from Roddy Piper. Also, Dusty Rhodes versus Kevin Sullivan. Can the Dream destroy the Prince of Darkness without destroying Kevin Sullivan? That's a long title. I don't like it.
I don't understand it. Can the Dream destroy the Prince of Darkness without destroying Kevin Sullivan? Isn't Kevin Sullivan the Prince of Darkness?
Well, he is, but the idea is that the Prince of Darkness is a personality.
Oh.
And that, you know, it's kind of like, can you destroy Ghost Rider without destroying Johnny Blaze?
Oh, I see.
So, and also, why Larry Zbysko must be stripped of the Georgia National title, and then Cowboy Bob Orton. Kerry Von Erich isn't tough enough to survive the 80s.
Well, he survived the 80s.
Barely. Barely.
But technically, he did survive the 80s.
Yeah.
So, Cowboy Bob Orton, you were a little premature in your prediction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then, of course... We have our full color pinup, which is Larry Zbysko. And now I was telling Joe earlier, it's not in this magazine, but I remember, I believe it wasn't actually in, was actually in here. And I used it, I think, in my movie Smark.
Oh, okay. You've had this magazine that long, huh?
I think so. I think, you know why? Because I think I bought it at an NWA Upstate event.
Okay.
I think that's where I bought it from. And I had this, they had the picture, and I used it as a prop in my movie. And I don't know what happened to it.
Speaking of NWA Upstate, I was watching clips of WrestleVision is back on the air now in Rochester. Very excited about that. And I was watching NWA Upstate clips that they were showing on WrestleVision. They were doing a Legends of WrestleVision roundtable episode this week. And it was Scotty Bender, Ivan the Impaler, and Superstar Rob Schultz. That was the roundtable.
Who's Superstar Rob Schultz?
You don't know Superstar Rob Schultz?
Maybe.
Superstar Rob Schultz. He was a wrestler in Rochester, but he was also a co-host of a podcast with Ivan, and he was just this tall, skinny dude, like just really skinny, but he was an okay worker, you know, for an indie worker, but his mic skills were better than like anybody
really
that have come through Rochester, Buffalo, whatever.
Better than Slick Rick Matrix?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So,
like, Rob Schultz has the gift of gab, and he's...
I vaguely remember him.
Yeah. He looks like Jesus. He's got the
maybe
long
that,
hair
maybe
and
that's
the
what
long
I'm thinking.
Beard.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
But okay. He was just really skinny and really lanky, and they actually had an ongoing gimmick on WrestleVision where he was the WrestleVision champion, and it was just one of those toy belts, and they wrote WV on top of the belt, and he would defend the belt before the shows would start, like he'd have a match and he would just get his ass kicked through the whole match, but somehow come away with the belt. And it was actually pretty entertaining. Uh-huh. Shout out to Superstar Rob Schultz.
Yes.
And Ivan the Impaler and Scotty Bender.
Yeah.
Well, two of those guys are good friends of mine. Rob Schultz and I don't really know him that well. I don't think I've met him more than once or twice, but yeah, no, I'll put him over though. He's a good time.
Ringside with Bill After, basically the wrap up of all the new stuff going on. They're talking about something that they talk about later in this issue about Larry Zbysko spending $25,000 to receive the national title from Killer Brooks after he beat Paul Orndorff. That was a big kerfluffle.
$25,000 in 1983 money.
That's a lot of money.
That's like $100,000 in today's money. Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. It's a lot of kayfabe money, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. But basically, you know, we talk about that. And we talk about the Tully Blanchard and Gino Hernandez breaking up over a fight with the Grapplers. So.
Yeah.
We'll. And then like, I'll just skip ahead because this is one of those books. We got to skip ahead and fit to finish the...
I never really was familiar with the Grapplers, but they're featured a lot in this magazine, it seems like.
Well, the Grapplers were, you know, the hotness at the time. You know, they were the big deal. You know, Tony Anthony and Glenn Denton, I believe.
Yeah.
Under the hoods.
But,
and
but they're wearing masks, so you don't know who it's them.
So. But I do.
Yeah. Because you broke kayfabe.
Oh, sorry.
But yeah, you think of Tony Anthony, you think of... you know, this big fat guy. He's actually in pretty good shape.
Well, this was 1983, so he was still pretty svelte.
Yeah.
Back then, so, you know, but they just big burly guys and silver masks. I actually made the Grappler in one of my games, one of the WWF games, WWE games back in the day. But he actually, I think the way it goes is that the Grappler was wrestling Jake Roberts when Jake Roberts accidentally invented the DDT.
Oh, okay.
So that's, I think it was Len Denton.
That's all an accident.
It was all an DDT. Accident. Then also, also in the news, there's Paul Jones is managing Jake Roberts, who apparently, so Jake Roberts is in Mid-Atlantic again, or maybe he's in Georgia. I can't tell. Or he's in Mid-Atlantic at this time, and he just came from Florida under the Satan control of Kevin Sullivan.
Oh, yeah.
And so the way that they're talking about it is that Jake was briefly committed to a mental institution, and it's that Paul Jones is taking advantage of a very confused man. Jones bashes Jake's head into the dressing room lockers if he does not follow specific instructions.
I could see that. I could totally see that happening. Yeah.
Did you see Paul Jones?
Yeah.
He's
just like, Jake, you need to listen to me. Smashed his head into a locker. Oh, yeah.
Man, no wonder he got all screwed up.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, back Jack Mulligan and Barry Windham back together.
Oh, father and son back together.
Yeah, I guess they had a split, but then Blackjack came back to Florida and said, what the fuck? It is rumored that Bobby Heenan put a $10,000 bounty on the head of Hulk Hogan. Heenan reportedly does not want Hogan to have any more title shots in the AWA title. Also, in AWA, Sheik, Adnan Al-Kasi, and Crusher Blackwell have been suspended from the AWA for repeated sneak attacks and are vacationing in Hawaii.
See, I didn't know that Crusher Blackwell had a Sheik gimmick.
Oh, he did? Yeah, you didn't know that?
And it's pretty awesome to see a photo of Crusher Blackwell with like the Arabian garb, and he just looks so out of place.
What was him and I want to say Patera, but maybe not. No, wait, I'm thinking it's somebody else that was doing it. Ah, man, I feel like I want to say it was him and Patera that teamed up, but yeah, he was the one that went full in on the Sheik Blackwell. Maybe
he looks like that YouTuber Boogie2988. that's who Crusher Blackwell looks like in this photo. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Shout out to Boogie.
So
that guy's got like 3 million subscribers on YouTube. That guy,
what does he do?
He's just the fat guy who talks about video games.
Is he good?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
You know what YouTube show I actually got into, and it's kind of related to something that you watch, going in Raw, is Wrestling with Regret. I don't know if you've ever checked that out.
Remind me of what that is about.
So basically, it's this guy, Brian Zane, who's like used to be a worker at some point.
Yeah.
And now he just does these videos and just kind of goes over the stupid wrestling thing. It's kind of like a WrestleCraft thing. But,
yeah.
But it's not as jokey as WrestleCrap.
Yeah.
I mean, WrestleCrap is fine.
Yeah.
But this guy is like, he used to be a worker, so he kind of has like that perspective, and it's not, but not really so much that perspective, but it's fun, and he does little sketches, but it's like,
oh, okay.
Videos are like maybe 15.
Oh, now it's all coming back to me on how I've heard of Wrestling with Regret. So Wrestling with Regret and Going in Raw are going to be doing that live show. Day of No Mercy in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
which we're both like, oh yeah, you're fans of Wrestling with Regret. I'm fans of Going in Raw. I'm not a fan of spending $25 on a ticket.
Well, here's what I'm gonna say this. If you're a podcast or you're something in LA and you're doing something at like Nerd Melt or wherever it is, like one of the podcast event, you're like the Improv or Starburns Castle, whatever it is. And you're charging like $20-25 for your show.
Yeah.
I'm not going.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of puts me in the level where I'm like, I like you, but I don't like you that much.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're doing $10, I'll probably, I think honestly, my limit is $10.
I think 15 is my limit.
Maybe 15.
Yeah.
But if you're going anything higher than that, you got me. I'm out.
Cause you got to remember in Los Angeles, a lot of like, not at Meltdown, but a lot of these places, you have to pay for parking. You have to pay for a valet.
Well, Meltdown, you got to find parking on the street.
Meltdown, I mean, you're trying to find
street parking, unless there's no meters available. You got to find a spot somewhere on those back streets.
Luckily it's Sunday. I know you're going to be like, oh, but the Sunday is free meters, not in Los Angeles. Los Angeles, you have to pay meters on Sundays in some parts.
Not everywhere.
Not everywhere, but in Hollywood you do. And I know that's technically West Hollywood. I think you might have to pay meters on Sundays there. Probably. I'm not sure.
Probably.
But, I mean, I could find a side street parking. But there's so much going on in Los Angeles that finding parking, even on a Sunday, is kind of a task in itself. You got to get there at least a half hour early and drive around and look for a parking space.
Yeah.
So that on top of paying $25, I'd rather just give those guys a couple bucks for Patreon every month showing my support for them, which I haven't done yet either. But
both of those shows do have Patreon, so if you want to support them better, you know, just give them something so they can actually use it, because you know, they, instead of, you know, because I don't know what kind of deals they have. I'm assuming it's like a 50-50 door deal or something.
We don't have a Patreon yet for this. I don't think we will ever get that to that point.
Well, we need actually people that actually support.
Yeah,
this, and that's how it is. Like, I've talked about doing a Patreon for Worst Collection Ever, and it's like, well, you got to know how many people are actually going to support it.
I think you need at least like 10,000 followers.
I don't know if that much.
You don't think that much?
I think you can get away with a little bit. Get away with less than that.
Yeah,
but as long as those people are dedicated to your show, like, you have to have that real estate and that they're willing to give you an extra couple of bucks a month, and that you have to provide that content.
Yeah.
You know, because that's also the key too, is, and that's something that, you know, these places, you know, I don't know about Going in Raw, but I know Western with Gret does it, and they do it well, where they're like, okay, you gave me this money, I'm going to do these reviews. I'm going to put together the extra bandwidth in my time, in my day, to put together this extra video for you, because you pay me. So
Going in Raw does it too, and they do podcasts every day now. It's actually like that can be very taxing, but that's like their full-time job.
If that's their full-time job, that's
what they do for a living now, is that they do that, and they do Patreon and YouTube ads is how they earn their revenue. So I feel like I enjoy these guys. I should throw some Patreon money at them. So I think I will.
Yeah.
I think I will throw some money at them on Patreon. So if you listen to Going in Raw and you hear them give me a shout out, you'll know that I wasn't lying, because they give shout outs to all their Patreon backers.
Yeah, put your money where your mouth is, Joe.
I'm going to have to. Even a dollar a month.
Yeah. I think I should support more Patreons.
I only support three.
I don't support any right now, but there are people that I am big fans of that I feel could, you know, I feel I should be giving my dollars to.
Actually, I support two, because one of them stopped collecting Patreon. Because he's not doing anything right now. He's like, I don't want to take your money, I'm not doing anything.
Well, that's true. Yeah. At least he's honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Dressing Room Confidential. Basically, this is kind of a...
By Stu Sachs.
Stu Sachs.
Yeah.
This is a column about, you know, kind of expanding on the whole thing with Bobby Heenan putting the bounty on Hulk Hogan's head.
And Bobby Heenan is sitting there in his office with his checkered leisure jacket. What is it? Checkered sport coat.
It was a plaid, like a plaid.
Yeah.
Like a checkered jacket.
Yeah. And
it's a messy office.
It's a very messy office.
I assume it's Vern Gagne's office, or assuming it's Donna Gagne's office, or whoever's working.
Yeah, it's somebody's office.
The Gagne.
It's got wood panel walls, which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's definitely very 80s.
Yeah.
This is a very 80s picture, and I like it. In focus, just your random... I feel like this is what they do to figure out how to... When these magazines together, they just try to figure out things to put in here.
Yeah.
And this is kind of one of those things where they have like a thing about like Exotic Asian Street being managed by James A. Dillon.
Which I never knew happened.
I didn't know that either.
So that's actually great that I saw that. Yeah. Cause
where is it? Is this in Florida, apparently? I don't remember him ever being in Florida.
So Adrian Street, I always think of him with Miss Linda, who is his wife.
You know, you're right. Yeah.
I never thought he'd ever had a manager, so let alone James J. Dillon. I want to see footage of this.
You know, that's actually...
Yeah, it looks like Florida. Yeah,
Florida. So I'm very intrigued by that.
Yeah.
And then you have a little spot here, because, you know, apparently must be... I mean, it's Bill's Ad Magazine, so whatever. But, you know, they're just like, look, Bill Wafter got married, and here's a picture of him and his wife in Bermuda. So I'm like, congratulations.
Oh, okay. That's like their honeymoon photo.
Yeah, they're on honeymoon.
Okay, because I was going to say that is one ugly wedding dress. But that is not a wedding dress. That's just a hat.
Well, they're both wearing hats.
Yeah.
It's bride and groom hats.
But I thought like there was like one of those wedding veils with the hats. Like, you know, you've seen them. And yeah, but that's not the case. So
wedding veils with the hats?
Yeah, a hat with a veil on it. I don't know.
I was trying to think. I'm thinking like one of those like... desert hats,
yeah, with like with the back. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Something like that.
It's only fashion.
Yeah. It's the 80s. A lot of things were going on back then.
They were.
A lot of cocaine.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, cocaine was to blame for wedding veil hats.
Yeah.
On assignment with Liz Hunter, who basically, this is just kind of, a lot of people are taking contention to the fact that she is talking, the way that she talks about the male wrestlers, because yeah. She's a lady and she's a full-time wrestling journalist, and she kind of talks about them. I mean, she reports on them, but she also kind of feels like the way that she sometimes will report stuff is like she has like a relationship with them in some sorts. Like, you know, like they kind of like a favorite reporter. You know, I was saying just like a favorite reporter being like, yeah. Oh, I love this woman. You know, I love her, you know, and I have a relationship, not like a romantic relationship, but like kind of like it's casual and it's fun.
Yeah.
And so since it's the 80s, you know, the names are thrown around here is talking about how, you know, Jimmy Snuka calling her Pretty Mama and like Tony Garea and Buddy Rose and, you know, all that, which, I mean, Liz Hunter, so this is 1983. You know, fast forward to, you know, 10 years later, you know, just replace these names with like Lex Luger, Sting, you know, Randy Savage, you know, whatever. And it's just, it's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
So off the top rope, Dan Shockett, RIP. I didn't really read these.
Dan Shockett's dead?
Yeah, Dan Shockett. Dan Shockett was real and he died.
Oh.
And then he was replaced by the very real... quotes Eddie Elner.
Oh, Eddie Elner. Yeah. I didn't know Dan Shockett was a person though.
Yeah.
And he's dead.
And he was the heel guy talking about heel things. And yeah, I didn't really read this.
Yeah, neither did I.
I mean, he's just people just being like, you idiot, you know, how dare you talk about, you know, the face this way, and he's like, you idiot, back.
Yeah, I see Bob Backlund in there. He's got him in a hold.
No, that's not him. That's Scrappy McGowan.
Oh.
Yeah, who also looks like a blonde Budnick. But yeah, just kind of being a trolling people here. That's what he does.
And Rick Martel's holding up a pencil, it looks like.
We signed an autograph. I think he's doing a raffle.
Oh, he's doing a raffle.
And he's got a pencil. Oh, maybe there's another match away and he's doing the thing from the Secrets of Wrestling where he puts the pencil up to let the wrestlers know to go home. Do you remember that?
Oh, no.
Oh, you know, okay. So there was that show.
Yeah, I remember the show. I just don't remember this.
That was one of the things where it's like, and ringside, when the announcer puts up the pencil, that means it's time to end the match.
Oh, okay.
And that was... that was one of the jokes in that thing, which obviously was never, that was not true, but yeah, so that's what he's doing here. So so then we have a press conference of Mr. Wrestling 2, who gives a fuck.
But he's got that sweet Pro Wrestling Illustrated shirt does. On.
I do like these poses for the shirt. Like, it's kind of like he's looking at the reporters that are there.
Yeah.
And maybe he is actually talking to them. And I know that Bill Apter, Dan Shockett, and Craig Peters are all real people.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's looking at them wearing the shirt and he's just reacting. And basically he just, you know, he's tag team champions in Mid-South with Tiger Conway Jr. And he's very happy and things are going very well. Wahoo McDaniel, the AWA's most dangerous contender.
Okay.
He's dangerous.
Who's he wrestling?
He's wrestling Rene Goulet, actually.
Is that Rene Goulet?
Yeah, this is AWA, Rene Goulet, looking... One of my favorite items in the wrestling sleaze list is about Rene Goulet and how he is just a complete slob.
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
No, I don't think I've ever actually went and looked at it. I've only heard it secondhand through other people.
So one day when you have a moment, read the wrestling sleaze list. You could just search on Google and just go through it and just find the things that are funny.
Is Rick Matrix on the wrestling sleaze
list? He is.
Okay.
Because he's in there about the time when him and the Blue Meanie wrestled naked at Al Snow's school.
Okay, that's confirmed.
Right.
But I thought maybe another story of his might be on there.
I think that's the only time he made that list.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, at least I remember. I mean, yeah. And I've read the wrestling sleaze list many times.
They would do stuff like they would tape over promos like on tapes that like Al Snow would show his students of like them wrestling naked or them cutting naked promos.
So, right.
Yeah.
But Rene Duguay, apparently he was such a slob that he, according to the entry, he would just shit and piss himself and never changes clothes. And then one day he came in and he was really happy and everybody was like, "What's up, Rene?" And he's like, "Bertha Faye just gave me a rim job. I don't have to clean for weeks."
Bertha Faye?
Bertha Faye.
So was he? This is when he was a road agent?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was he got a good rim job from the Monster Ripper, Bertha Faye.
R.I.P. Bertha Faye.
R.I.P. Bertha Faye. Rene Goulet's still alive, I think.
Yeah, he's still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so basically it's just like he deserves better, Wahoo McDaniel. I'm like, sure he does. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about Wahoo McDaniel.
I could care less.
I could care less most of the time, but then because he shows up on like, you know, old wrestling things and he's up there and he's always looked old and he's always looked, you know, just like this pudgy tough guy, you know, and he's tough as nails, but I've never watched a match and been like, "Oh, that was a really good match with Wahoo McDaniel."
Yeah, but apparently he's a better worker than Chief J. Strongbow.
Yeah, I think he was. If you're talking,
I know he's a better athlete. He was a NFL or NFL an AFL football player, I guess.
Yeah,
yeah.
When you're talking your wrestling Native Americans, he pretty much is right up there.
Yeah,
like he's pretty much the top one.
Yeah,
I can't really think of any others.
Well, it was him and Chief J. Strongbow.
Him and Chief J. Strongbow. But I always felt that I was, despite being a WWF person, I was always familiar with Wahoo. Well, granted, because he always kept working. I think Chief J. Strongbow stopped working well before,
yeah,
you know, I started watching wrestling. So Dusty Rhodes versus Kevin Sullivan. Can the Dream destroy the Prince of Darkness without destroying the Kevin Sullivan or whatever? Basically, this is just a recap of the Dusty Rhodes Kevin Sullivan war,
yeah,
to this point, and you know, we get to hear about that. And basically, I mean, there's not much else to really say. I mean, I feel like I could talk about Kevin Sullivan's Satanism stuff because it was always so weird. I could talk about that forever. It was always something that always fascinated me about Florida. You know, when I just got into it, yeah, watching more of these videos and just,
where can I find Florida videos?
Well, I own a number of DVDs for Florida.
Okay.
That I can definitely borrow you.
Yes, that'd be great.
And they have, well, obviously, YouTube. And WWE owns the stuff, but they don't ever put it up. I mean, it's not really, I think they're more worried about, you know, the world class and the Mid-South and whatever's left from WCW that needs to go up, which is fine because I'd much rather they do that. But they have there's these compilations that I have, mm-hmm, that are like, they're called Turnbuckle Memories, and they're like hosted by like Dusty Rhodes and like occasionally Mike Graham's in them, and they're basically just episodes of the Florida wrestling TV, and it's just episodes of that. And so they're from different eras, like some's from 82 and then some's from 86 and whatever, 87.
Oh, see, I want to watch it in order, the way it aired, unedited.
It's hard to find it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point when the WWE Network does put all this stuff up, you know, but I don't think it's...
Maybe I'll tweet at them and they'll give me their generic response. We don't know when we're going to be at, like I did with... I tweeted at WWE Network asking, "Hey, how about getting WCW Saturday Night up there?" And they were like, "Oh, we don't have any say in what's going to be airing on the network, but you're
the network."
Yeah, it's like, you're the network. How do you not know this?
Yeah.
So
Kevin Sullivan, I do like this part here where they talk about there is a suspicion that Sullivan may have lost all control over himself as a result of his beliefs in Satanism. Because this is the 80s. It's a satanic panic. If you watched any episode of Unsolved Mysteries from that time, you pretty much, you know, mm-hmm, have this. The suspicion is intensified by the fact that Sullivan irrationally paints himself with strange makeup, even going so far to shave a demonic X in the hair on his chest. What's so demonic about an X?
It's easy to shave.
Right, but...
That's why it's demonic.
Okay.
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess not. But yeah, basically, you know, trying to... You know, Dusty's like, "I don't want to hurt him, but, you know, I'll battle him and take him down." And, you know, we got a bunch of shots of them fighting, you know, and so it's pretty cool. I mean, I say, you can't go wrong with, I'm never going to turn down a anything about Dustin or Kevin Sullivan in Florida. I'm always fascinated by it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is kind of early on and all that.
This photographer did a very good job.
Yes. Yes, great job. Great action shots here.
I wonder if it's George Neapolitano.
No, it's probably Bill Apter or Craig Peters. Rhodes and Sullivan have recently wrestled in a series of Diablo Canyon death matches where the leather glove of the Midnight Rider with a silver dollar attached to the back of it was placed on a pole in the ring. The first man to get the glove is legally allowed to use the weapon on his opponent.
Oh, why don't they just have a coal miner's glove match?
Well, that's basically, you know, it fits Dusty's brand better.
I guess so, yeah.
Which has a silver dollar, so they glued a silver dollar to the back. You just slap the guy in the face with your fist. That's a
great weapon, actually.
I want to see that match.
I want to have that as a weapon. Like, I want to just, like, have any weapons to declare when you're going through customs? Like, yeah, I have a silver dollar taped to a back of a glove.
It's a canyon. I use it in the Diablo Canyon. You might want to.
Yeah. I mean, I don't plan on using it unless we're in the Diablo Canyon, but you never know.
Yeah. So, win a phone call from Roddy Piper. Okay.
And it's probably the best picture in the entire magazine.
It's the best picture in any magazine.
Yeah.
And the picture is Roddy Piper. Okay, so first of all, Roddy Piper sitting in what appears to be my grandma's house.
Yeah.
He's sitting in grandma's house with PWIs on the table next to him here. Sitting there wearing the outfit. It's pretty much the same outfit we saw wearing on the cover. So he's shirtless, wearing the kilt and the coat. And the way his hand looks, it looks like he's rubbing his nipple.
Yeah, he's rubbing his nipple while he's on the phone. I have reason to believe he's having phone sex, or he's on the phone sex hotline.
Maybe he's calling that number where you call for the women's wrestling diaries.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
He's listening to that, and he's having a good time. And in the background, there's a picture of a painting.
Yeah.
That looks like it's mounted. It looks like it's resting against this bed. And it's this picture. It looks like a painting of Roddy Piper. With like
two swords.
Swords, or looks like lances behind him. That's a great one. I like that. I'll put that up in my house.
Yeah.
And basically, so they get a lot of letters from Roddy, letters about Roddy Piper. So they're like, you know what? Why don't you get a phone call? Why don't we try to do it so you can talk to Roddy Piper? And so all you have to do to get into this contest is fill in the coupon on this page. It's a coupon. And accompanied by your composition in 50 words or less, it is important that I talk to Roddy Piper because ...
Yeah.
And they will choose the best one. I don't know. Maybe we should try this.
All entries must be postmarked on no later than June 15th, 1983.
Well, obviously, we're not going to be able to make
it. So we're not going to be able to.
Roddy Piper's not even alive now, guys.
No.
Roddy Piper.
You could talk to him through a Ouija board.
We could do a seance.
Have a Ouija conversation with Roddy Piper. That should be our.
If PWI wants to run that contest now, you can do that.
So they could just use this photo. The same photo, but like in Star Wars, where when the characters died and they'd have the glow around them, they could just Photoshop the glow around Roddy Piper.
Get Industrial Light and Magic to touch up this photo.
And just have a Ouija conversation. Win a Ouija conversation with Roddy Piper. We will get our best expert who can contact the dead.
Okay.
And just write 50 words or less what you have to ask Roddy Piper.
Okay, so let's try this real quick. What will we say? If we were to enter this contest in any time.
I think you and I are disqualified from this contest because we've had a phone conversation with Roddy Piper. So I don't think. Yeah.
Oh, we did. We did. That's right. You were there too. We talked to him about the wrestling video. You and Big Mosh.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Roddy Piper is on the other line. And we talked about the WWE 2K.
It's 12.
WWE 12.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I like the game. I mean, my son play it. I remember him saying his son played it.
So technically we won the contest.
Yes.
Yeah, we won.
Wow. You know what? I remember most things. And you reminded me of that actually is quite wonderful.
Yeah, so I guess we're ineligible. But if you listening want a Ouija, well, you know, figure it out because we're moving on to the next
page. Figure it out. Yeah. Just figure it out. Why Larry Zbyszko must be stripped of the Georgia national title. We kind of already talked about this.
Yeah, he shouldn't be stripped, by the way.
Yeah, he paid for it fair and square.
Yeah.
I know it sets a precedent, but who gives a fuck? If you have money, do it.
That's right.
If Larry Zbyszko is that rich in 1983 from wrestling and he wants to pay for a title, then goddamn it, let him do it.
I mean, he was headlining MSG and Shea Stadium, so of course he had money. He had a lot of money.
Larry Zbyszko.
I still want to go back in time and like just see, like, because I've seen the matches. Obviously, those are available. Anyone could go watch these matches. But like, Larry Zbyszko was the number one heel in the WWF feuding with Bruno Sammartino. That just doesn't make any sense to me.
It's just weird.
Yeah,
Larry Zbyszko being number one in anything that I was watching is very weird.
Because like by the time I was watching him, he was the Cruncher. And teaming up with Arn Anderson.
I always just remembered him from like the magazines of like, oh, he's an AWA guy.
Yeah.
He had a ninja, and then he would beat up Nick Bockwinkel, and he had a weird name. And then he was a Cruncher.
Yeah.
And which the Cruncher period of Larry Zbyszko is pretty good.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Cruncher.
I was watching Starrcade 91 earlier, and yeah, he was the Cruncher.
Yeah. So, Bob Orton. Kerry Von Erich isn't tough enough to survive the 80s. Basically, they're feuding over the Missouri title.
Yeah.
You know, because this is actually a weird period right here, because this is right before, this is 83, so this is like just on the precipice of like WWF becoming like huge. Like, we're just about there.
Yeah.
Like, we're still very much like, you know, still a lot of regional shit going on and whatever. And I do like this picture here of Bob Orton, though. He's beating on Kerry Von Erich in such an awkward way, because Kerry Von Erich is like, he's out of the ring. I think his feet are tied up in the ropes, because you can see them kind of tied, like entwined here.
Yeah.
But he's hanging from there and he's holding himself up on his hand. Or, well, it seems that Bob Orton is picking him up by his hair and he's about to smack him in the face while he's upside down.
Kerry Von Erich also still having chest hair.
Yes.
Photo, which is very weird to see Kerry Von Erich with chest hair.
Yeah. What happened when everybody decided to start waxing?
At some point, all the wrestlers got together and like, you know what? Chest hair's got to go.
Because Hogan used to have chest hair.
Yeah. They're all like...
Martel had chest hair.
Must have been like around 84. They're like, this is going to be it now. This is
what we're doing.
We're well into the 80s. Chest hair is out. We're done with chest hair.
You know, so. This Magnum PI fad is done.
Yeah.
I mean, so a bunch of guys kept it, but not everybody. But a lot of people, I think, made the decision to...
George Steele was the exception in the rule. He's like, you know what? I need it for my gimmick. I'm an animal.
But you also like Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard. You know, they were all full of hair.
I guess because they were tag team specialists. Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Hayes.
Yeah, Michael Hayes definitely needed it for his gimmick.
You know, and Jimmy Garvin, I feel it was always, you know, always was carrying that around.
Yeah.
You know, but most of the people kind of went the way. You know, like Larry Zbyszko, obviously.
Yeah, he got rid of his chest hair.
That would be weird if he was waxed. If Larry Zbyszko was ever waxed, I'd probably be like, oh, that's not him. Tully and Gino split.
They
talked about that.
Yeah. I didn't even know they ever teamed up, so I'm glad I read
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
They were the dynamic duo. And in Joe Blanchard's Southwest Championship or Southeast, whatever.
Southwest, I think.
Southwest Championship Wrestling. Him and Gino were the fucking shit.
Oh.
You know, and then eventually Tully moved on to Mid-Atlantic, and then Gino went to World Class
and
died.
World Class and got into drugs and bad people. And
he had... According to Gary Hart, the candy dish full of Coke on his table, just having a party. But
Gino lived a life that a lot of people would love to have lived.
Well, not for that price though.
Yeah.
Also, Wrestling 2 and Tiger Conway continue winning ways, and they're looking at the belts. They're like, "Oh, look at those belts!"
Yeah,
they're very happy about winning those belts. They're each holding one, but for some reason they're like, you know, like Mr. Two Wrestling Two is like, "Hey, look at my belt." And he's like, Tiger Conway's like, "Yeah, it's a good belt.
It's a good belt. Yours is you got the better of the two belts."
I don't know why, but you just did.
He's like, "When next time we defend the titles and I win, we win them back, I'm going to take that belt."
That's what split it. That's that'd be a great way to split up a team.
It's like, you had the better belt than me. I took it. Yeah, like when the ref hands him the belts, he grabs the good one.
Can you imagine that? How has that never been to split up a tag team? You know, like, "Oh, my belt's got a dent in it." And it's like, "Well, I got this one." It's like, "No, I'm taking that one." And then you got a feud.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Let's do that. See, that's something that
that's what should split up Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. They should because something like that would set off Dean Ambrose. Like I think it would just set him off. I think
he would just be pissed off, and he would just be and he would flip out. Now actually could turn him heel.
Yeah,
and you can keep keep Seth the face. Yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah,
that is brilliant, man. Now I wish I was writing wrestling.
Yeah.
I'm going to send that there so they can use it.
Why don't they hire us? I don't understand.
I don't know.
We're just as qualified as any writer.
I don't want to work there. I don't want to work in that environment. I know how crazy it is.
Like, we could pull like a Freddie Prinze Jr. and stay there for like 3 weeks. And
but your Freddie Prinze ain't getting hazed.
We're not going to get hazed. They don't do...
By hazed, I mean Michael hazed.
We're not going to get hazed. We're the writers. They're not going to haze
us. What do you mean? That's all they do is haze writers.
They're not going to haze us.
They hate the writers.
They're not going to haze any of... I'll tell you what you do is you when you go there on your first day in your bag, you have a copy of JBL's book in your bag. And then like JBL, when he goes to haze you, he'll see that you read his book and he's like, you know what? This guy's all right. And he'll leave you alone. He'll have your back.
No, he won't.
That's how you do it.
No, he won't. I don't like it. Anyway, so
his book's only like $13 on Amazon. Get it.
Protect yourself. Look, I took your advice. I made more money by saving on this book. $15.
He'd be like, you're all right. And then you just be like, yeah, I'm a big Republican. I love Trump. And JBL will have your back.
Just wear a Make America Great Again hat. Hey, guys, I'm at work. Oh, JBL's like, that guy's great.
He'll have your back. He won't haze you.
Whole bullshit.
I don't think I'm going to get hazed if I'm a writer. I think if you're a worker, yeah, but that just goes with the territory. But if you're a writer, you're not
I think that's all they do is just torture those people.
No, I don't think so at all. Don't the writers...
So many of them quit.
I thought they just quit because they like got better writing jobs.
No,
like,
they quit
for wrestling.
But some of them, well, maybe yes, that. But also, they quit because it's just fucking, this is bullshit.
Next, because they always post like the writing jobs online, like on Indeed or Monster or whatever. I think next time they have a posting, I'm going to apply. But here's the thing: I don't have very many writing credits under my IMDb. So I'm going to have to beef up my IMDb a little bit, and then I'll have my writing credits. I only have a couple short credits. But you have a full... Actually, technically...
I have no credits.
You have SMARC.
That's not a credit.
That's a credit.
I mean, it is, but it's not.
Yeah, I mean, my credits on IMDb are all bullshit.
That hasn't got me anything.
It could get you a gig with the WWE.
I sure hope it does.
Yeah.
I sure hope Triple H watches it and goes, that guy's got the chops. It's just not.
We need to start a fake television show, and then Jen should apply too.
Jen has way more credits than I do.
All three of us, we should just apply to be writers for WWE.
Let's combine one big POC packet. We'll go into the team.
That's it. You like just send us in on TV tapings Monday and Tuesday. That's it.
Yeah,
we'll run everything by the Road Dog because it seems like he's like the key.
Road Dog's in charge now.
He was the one who was like, no, we're having Baron Corbin win the Money in the Bank. That was
all Road Dog. That backfired.
Yeah. Why did it backfire?
Because he made fun of somebody.
Oh, who did he make?
I think he made fun. I read that maybe he made fun of a military veteran.
Oh, that's not cool.
I don't know. I could see him doing that because he's just a grumpy dude, Baron Corbin is. And I could see that happening. He ended up, he's in the doghouse. That's actually another, I think me and Big Mosh once tossed us around how we would do a wrestling show called The Doghouse.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, you're in the doghouse now. It's like you just have like all the wrestlers, old wrestlers come on and be like, you're in the doghouse. Like, oh man, I got fired and I'm still in the doghouse. I didn't shake John Cena's hand within 30 seconds of eye contact. Because that's what they
do. Oh, did I tell you that? So when I went
You didn't shake John Cena's hand?
No, but when I went, we went to dinner last week, or was it 2 weeks ago now? Whenever my birthday was.
You texted me this, but
go ahead. That the Bella Twins were at the table over at the, we were at the Wolfgang, well, we weren't at Wolfgang Puck's yet. We were at the bar inside Hotel Bel Air.
Right.
And the Bella Twins were there. They were at a table getting dinner and all that.
Just the two?
Just the two. There had just.
Did Brie have the baby with her?
No, it was just the two twins. They had just done the Teen Choice Awards, I guess, for Nickelodeon. And they were staying at the hotel.
Oh, okay.
And they were like taking selfies and tweeting them out and all that. And then like the next
day, I didn't know they were tweeting them.
Because the next day, my girlfriend showed me all their tweets from inside like the hotel. So I was like, "Yep, we saw them doing it." So Yeah.
So they're just, they weren't talking to each other, just doing selfies constantly. They weren't even eating. The food just comes down, just like snap, snap, snap.
Kind of. It's kind of what it looked like. Yeah. When they got their food, that's when my girlfriend and I got up and went to the, we went to the restaurant. So it was funny. So like, where they have at the Wolfgang Puck's in the Hotel Bel Air, they have like the regular seating, and then they have like the private booths where they're not really private, but like once you're in the booths, like there's like three walls surrounding you.
Yeah.
So there's in the booths there was Wolfgang Puck and his family were sitting at the one booth.
Oh, he actually came to the restaurant.
Yeah, he was actually there.
Oh, wow.
And then in the next booth over was my girlfriend and I, and then the next booth on the other side of us was Lisa Kudrow and her family were eating. So it was like all these booths of famous people, and it's just me and my girlfriend. So,
hey, you're famous. You do this podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So.
So
had a very good steak there, by the way.
Yeah, that sounds good.
It was delicious.
Which, well, how do you get it?
Oh, medium rare.
I think I've just discovered that getting meat medium rare.
Yeah.
Because I've been doing like medium well for years.
No, you got to go rare.
And then I started doing medium, and I'm like, I could do medium rare.
Yeah.
Because
when it comes to steaks and stuff like that, medium rare. When it comes to a burger, I usually go medium.
Yeah, I've been doing it. I've been like, oh, I think when I was younger, I just like, well done, I guess. I want my burger cooked.
Yeah. Like, but I hate going out for steaks in Canada because you have to get it well done. It's like that's the law.
Really?
That's bullshit. I want a medium rare because like Canada has mad cow disease up there.
Well, you know what? That's the thing. You know what? Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. I will go if I'm gonna get food. If I'm gonna get like meat, especially if like I'm in just anywhere. Like in, I don't know, maybe in like other countries or something like that. Like I just feel like I would want to get my, you know, not having the same biology that other people there, because it's kind of like how you don't drink the water.
Yeah.
When you go somewhere else, like you just kind of drink bottled water. But maybe you just get your meat really cooked.
Yeah.
So you can have like. You know, you don't have to worry about it being a certain temperature, you know, certain way and getting sick, you know.
But if I'm going somewhere else, I'm gonna just stick with the pasta and chicken, I think.
Yeah?
I'll keep the meat American.
Keep the meat American.
That's right. Only eat meat in America. By meat, we mean red meat, cows. Yeah.
So. Yeah. So what they're saying, this is our quote book section. Yeah. And really nothing else of note here, but other than Dizzy Hogan.
Dizzy Hogan making an appearance.
Shout out to Dizzy Ed Leslie Hogan.
Yeah.
Look at me. Talk about raw materials, man. I've got a warehouse of them. I've got the moves. I've got the speed. And I've got the most incredibly sculpted body in professional wrestling. All I need now is time. Dick Slater and Greg Valentine better start heading for the hills. And Ric Flair, you're not too far out of my sights either, old man.
It's funny how he calls out Greg Valentine. Only would team up with him just a little bit down the road.
Yeah, actually, maybe like 2 years later.
And formed the Dream Team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not friends now, I heard. I heard they
I hear Greg Valentine's not friends with anybody, though.
He's a grumpy dude. He looks like Triple H. Looks like Triple H when he gets older, when he's going to get older.
Yeah.
I always feel like every time I see a picture of Greg Valentine, I'm like, oh, that's what Triple H looks like later. But did I meet Greg Valentine? I think I have.
I've never met him. I would have loved
to. Oh, did we? Oh, we didn't. Okay, we're going to get to that next one. But yeah, and so like, the rest of it's, you know, let's just jump right to the ratings here. We have a rating section. This is pre, like, a certain form. There's a certain format, so it's a lot different. There's not even ratings analysis. It's 1983, so it's like stuff's not, isn't as familiar yet. So you just have NWA, American Wrestling Association, and the WWF, and that's it.
Yeah, so they've encompassed all of the NWA territories into the NWA, gave them the top 10, and Dewey Robertson coming in at number 9.
Yeah,
kind of a surprise.
Dewey Robertson in there. Yeah. Well, this is probably just encompassing like all these different areas, because, you know, the way the NWA ratings were always were is that, you know, you had Greg Valentine, you know, Flair's number 1 because he's a champ, and
Valentine's probably the U.S. champ.
Valentine's U.S. champ, and then Larry's in Georgia.
Yeah.
Scott McGee's in Florida. Kerry Von Erich's in Texas or wherever. Dory Funk. Maybe he's in Mid-Atlantic. And then Bob Armstrong's in Georgia. Frank Dusek's in Florida. Tommy Rich in Georgia. Dewey Robertson, maybe he's in Canada. I don't know. Or maybe wherever. I don't know. But yeah, these are all, it all makes sense. And then you have the tag teams. And this is actually is interesting here. So you have all these 1983 tag teams.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Fabulous Kangaroos. in 1983. I didn't realize they were still a prominent team. And they're number three in between Greg Gagne and Jim Brunzel and the Masked Grapplers. So I didn't realize that they were that prominent back then.
Go back to the WWF for a second. I kind of saw something that kind of surprised me. I didn't know Eddie Gilbert, number 10. I didn't know Eddie Gilbert ever wrestled in the WWF.
So Eddie Gilbert started out in the WWF as a young jobber.
Oh.
He basically was between... It's kind of like Kurt Hennig did, too. Like, they started out as, like, young jobbers, and then, like, Kurt Hennig went to Pacific Northwest, and Eddie went to Memphis.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is very young Eddie Gilbert.
They have Ivan Koloff as number one, but he was not the Intercontinental Champion, so it's kind of weird that he would be number one.
But he was getting, at the time, he was getting the most shots at Backlund, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
he was the transitional champ between Bruno and Backlund, right?
No, he was the transitional champ between Bruno and Morales.
Back in
1970.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just here, like he's in between.
Yeah, because this is like the end of Backlund's title run.
It's about to come then. He's getting close there. It's in between.
So was Morocco the IC champ?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was like Morocco and I think Morales were trading it.
Yeah.
And then I think 83. So yeah, him and Patera, you know, are fighting each other. So, that's what's going on in WWE. No, Patera's in AWA, so I think it's him and Morales that are fighting for it. Even though Morales ain't in this
ring. Yeah, there's Patera. Yeah, I don't see Morales' name at all. Yeah.
AWA's got Hogan and Jerry Lawler, which is kind of.
And Buck Zumoff at number 10.
Fuck Buck Zumoff. So, that's it for this magazine for the. Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Yeah. Oh, you want to talk about the back?
Just the back cover has a Wrestling Album 5 advertisement, and all it is...
It's not music, it's pictures. It's
just an album of photos, and it's just promo photos of wrestlers, and it looks great, and I want it.
Yeah, great photos.
Yeah, like that one of Snuka's the best, I think. So
that is really good. That's a wild Snuka.
Yeah.
He also got a great action shot of Andre diving on somebody.
Doing a big splash, and then Tony Atlas's one is very good.
That one's... Yeah. That one stands out really good. And then you also have, I like how like some of these other pictures here, like they have this collage up here that is on cover, and you got Hogan wearing a dope cape.
Yeah, that heel cape that he wore back in the day.
You got, got young DiBiase.
He's got the cape on in that photo, too.
Yeah, Hogan in the cape, man. Shout out to Hogan in the cape.
Yeah, Greg Valentine's photo's great. Look at that. Oh, man.
It's a lot of good color.
Tommy Rich has got a great pose. Ricky Steamboat looking kind of generic. But he's got a good wrestling pose.
He's got the weird mustache though. So he's always wearing the mustache. That's weird. But Pro Wrestling Illustrated, August 1983. That's it for this issue, and that's it for this week's show. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Angry Hero Sean on Twitter and Instagram.
Sweatpants Joe, Twitter and Instagram. So there you go.
I Could Talk Kayfabe on Facebook. You can find us there. Please interact with us there, as well as on Apple Podcasts. You can rate, review, and subscribe, and leave a rating so we can get you in the drawing for a shirt. And it's a quality shirt.
Can't stress it enough how nice the shirt is.
It's a lot nicer than you would think.
I'm very pleased with what Amazon does with their shirts.
Because.
Like, was it Cafe Press was the big one that, like, everyone would go to? And
there's a bunch of options.
Press's shirts suck. And everyone's like, oh, buy my shirt. And I always see it, and it's like Cafe Press. I'm like, nah, I'm good.
Cafe Press is not that good. TeePublic is actually really good. But Amazon, surprisingly good. Yeah. I wasn't expecting it to be the kind of quality it is. So
it's a high-quality shirt. I'm very happy I own one.
Yeah, so get on that, folks. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.